We'll be on part two of the series we started last week on the case of Onesimus. And so it'll be the case of Onesimus, part two. And we'll go ahead and open in a word of prayer and then go ahead and launch from there. Lord, as we come before you, thank you for the opportunity to gather here once again. I ask you to meet with us during this time as your word is opened. And I just ask you, Lord, to lead and guide. I ask you to give me the words you'd have me to say. In Jesus' name, amen. We find the details, really, here in Philemon, beginning in about verse 10, that surround this unique case that Paul was writing to Philemon in this church about. And we find it in verse 10 to begin with. I beseech thee for my son Onesimus, whom I have begotten in my bonds. Onesimus was a convert of the Apostle Paul. Onesimus was not the son of Paul in the flesh, but was a son in the sense that the Apostle Paul had a part in his new birth. If you've ever led someone to Christ and then in turn placed them under your wing and helped nurture them up in the faith, then you can relate to Paul here. And the fact that they are your sons and daughters in the faith. And as I mentioned last week, Paul was writing to Philemon and this little house church here because he has a special mission, not only for this pastor, but for this church. And it was to take in one of his converts. But it was one of his converts who didn't necessarily have the best track record with not only Philemon, but the church. Now, do you know what kind of church I want to have? I want to have a church that can help those that few can. I want to have a church that God can trust to send people that few would desire to have any dealings with. Paul knew that in the case of Onesimus, it wasn't going to be easy, but he knew that Philemon and this church was up for the task. And you know, we live in a day where even amongst the church of the living God, we want top shelf this, we want top shelf that. We even at times want top shelf people. To the point to where most people at times don't even feel at home. In many of our churches, they feel inadequate. They feel as though they don't quite measure up to the church. But Paul trusted this pastor and this church to not only minister to Onesimus, but to accept him as their own. And we'll hit on that a little later on in this chapter. But let's dive into the person, Onesimus. We see in verse 11, which in time past was to thee unprofitable, but now profitable to thee and to me. When we think of the past is at times hard to let go of, especially when the past hurts, especially when there are perhaps people in the past that have hurt you, but in order to move forward, you must let go of the past. Christians are living by and large in one of three places, the past, the present, or the future. If they live in the past, it hinders their present and their future. If they live in the future, it hinders their present. The best place to be is allowing the past to shape you, which means you learn from it, and you only bring the things from the past that's going to help you in the present and is going to help you going forward, which in turn shapes your future. Paul had to trust that this pastor and this church would have this attitude. When it came to Onesimus, it's all water under the bridge. Paul tells the church, yes, there was a time that he was unprofitable to thee. See, it gets personal. Paul didn't say unprofitable to them over there. He said unprofitable to thee. Well, that changes things, as you know. It's one thing to hear about someone doing something to someone else, but it's a whole different story when you experience it yourself or experience it through someone that is close to you. Again, Paul said unprofitable to thee. Unprofitable means bringing no profit producing no gain. So Onesimus was at one point a drain to this pastor and this church. He did not bring profit. He took, but he did not give. He didn't give of himself. He was in great need from others, though. He wasn't a contributing part of the church. He wasn't profitable. Then Paul arrives at the place to say, essentially, now he is. See, Paul met this runaway slave while in prison. Paul leads him to Christ in prison. Paul disciples him while in prison. If you want to know who the first prison preacher was, it was Paul. And he didn't go in by choice. And he wasn't able to leave just when he wanted to. So Paul leads him to Christ in prison. Paul disciples him in prison. Paul undoubtedly finds out from Onesimus who he was, where he was, the pastor that he had ran away from, and he's often called the runaway slave. Now, many get all in a bind and say the Bible condoned slavery by this passage. There are certain, there's different usages of the word slavery in the Bible. In this context, when you think about Proverbs 22:7, the rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. One aspect that you have to remember when the Bible references slavery in some context, in some instances, the Bible is saying you are a slave if you owe somebody. The borrower is slave to the lender. Now, if you think about this tonight, if you have a car note, a mortgage payment, a credit card, any line of credit, then you owe the creditor. And you are a slave to them, which means you work for them until it's paid. And you might ask, you mean I work for the creditor? Yes, in large part, because you go to work to earn money to pay who you owe money to. And Onesimus owed the pastor here in Philemon. Perhaps Philemon gave him some type of money, some type of loan, some type of something. And Philemon was his servant. He was his slave, so to speak, in working off this debt. But Onesimus took off and did not pay what he owed. And Paul finds out about this in prison. After leading Onesimus to Christ, after discipling him, and I believe, this is my disclaimer, I believe that Paul believed the following. In the case of Onesimus, I believe Paul believed that Onesimus needed to go back to Philemon, where he got it wrong, and make it right. And then in the case of Philemon in the church, I believe Paul believed that the pastor in the church should give Onesimus the opportunity to make his wrongs right. There's something to be said about people going back to those who they've wronged. In a display of repentance, trying to make things right. You know, I did this when I resurrendered my life to the Lord. There were people that I had wronged. When I was away from the Lord, and I reached out to as many of them as I could and just said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I did. I'm sorry for what I said. I shouldn't have did that. There were people that I had sinned with, and I said, I'm sorry for that. Should have never happened. I should have never been there with you. There's also something to be said about others keeping the door open for others to be able to make things right. I'm reminded of one of our boys. He's two over here a laugh, but I'm reminded of one of our boys, Wesley. He's our youngest, as you know. When he was real little, one of the boys would hurt him, and even if on accident, he would completely orbit over it. And the other boys would say, Wesley, I'm sorry. And Wesley would exclaim back, no, not sorry. What this was a refusal to accept one's apology. You know, sometimes if we're honest, it takes time. If we're in the middle of the pain, I don't want to deal with that right now. I won't talk about that right now. Let me get over the pain first, and then I'll talk to you about that. I don't even want to see you right now. You know, but that can be our mentality. But what this was a refusal to accept one's apology. Now, I wonder how many times people would make things right with us and others if we allowed them to. I often tell people, go back and say sorry and try and make things right. If they don't accept it, then you did your part and you're right with God for doing it. All you can do is worry about you. See, I believe Paul believed these two things because I believe these two things are in line with Scripture. Onesimus needed to go back and make things right. And Philemon and the church needed to give him the opportunity to do that. Moving on, Paul knew that Onesimus would be profitable. Now, we see that in verse 11, which in time past was to thee unprofitable, but now profitable to thee and to me. I love these two words in verse 11, but now. This means in the case of Onesimus, things aren't what they used to be. Things are different now. Your encounter was with the old Onesimus, the lost and unregenerate Onesimus. But I present to you the Onesimus that has been born again. I don't present to you the same old unprofitable Onesimus. I present to you the new and profitable Onesimus. Philemon 1:11 again, it says, but now profitable to thee and to me. Onesimus changed. Now, I want to say this in the case of Onesimus. I've dealt with many of them, many types. They take, and they don't give. They take, and they don't return. They eat up the produce, but don't plant. They don't work. They need money, but they don't give money. They're altogether unprofitable to the ministry. And though unprofitable when it comes to people, it sounds like a harsh label. It is true. And Paul knew that in order for the church to believe that Onesimus was different, it was going to take a letter from him. See, in the case of Onesimus, those like Onesimus say I'm different a lot, when oftentimes, tragically and sadly, they're not. They just want to be, or just need something from you. I don't know about you, but I had to learn the hard way starting out in the addiction ministry. I had to learn the hard way at times. I believed people at times. And I don't think they were all coming to me with bad motives either, purposefully trying to play me. But they had an addiction. At times, they're going to tell you what you want to hear. They say things oftentimes like, I've changed. They say, I'm not who I used to be a lot. Probably so much to the point that if Onesimus returned without a letter from Paul, the church would have struggled to believe him. And who would know this better than the Apostle Paul? Paul, after his conversion, tried to join himself to the church. The church was afraid. We see that in the book of Acts. Why? Because they knew Paul as Saul. And it took faith to add Paul to the church. It took faith for the church to embrace Onesimus. Why is it at times that the church of the living God can exhibit faith in everything else, but not in people that are seeking to join the flock? I remember a pastor telling me one time, now there are legitimate cases that somebody just don't need to be a part of the church. And there are legitimate cases out there. Security, protection, different things like that. And there was a pastor, and I used some of what he said, because it did teach me something, even though I believed with the individual it was misapplied. But he talked about sometimes how churches and even pastors are all about the low-hanging fruit, what's easy, the fruit that's easy to get. And in terms of people, he's talking about, you know what, sometimes churches and pastors, they want easy people. And that's all they want is a church full of easy people. people that are easy to deal with, people that are easy to minister to, people that don't have as many problems as somebody else. Sometimes if we're not careful, our churches can be plagued with this. You know, that there's not many churches that would have an addiction ministry for that reason. They don't want them in the church. And it's tragic how you can, and I'm not saying we're necessarily going to have one here, but what I am saying is it's tragic that there are churches that are like that. They don't want them a part of the church. I even had someone go so far as tell me, and it was a pastor, that they needed to have their own church. And that can be kind of another thing, sometimes how you can be an outsider to sometimes to what goes on in a lot of churches. Sometimes it's who you're willing to minister to. If anyone believed in the power of God to change lives, it was Paul. And Paul sent a letter ahead of Onesimus to say, essentially, I get it. At one time, he was unprofitable, but now he's the real deal. He's different. Onesimus has changed. And I say this tonight, give people room to change. People can, people will, and people do change all the time. It doesn't mean that every type of Onesimus in the world will change, but there will be those that do. In verse 12, we see, whom I have sent again, thou therefore receive him that is mine own bowels. Paul wanted him to be received into the church. This implies a joining, to be a part of membership, not to just fill a pew, but a sense of belonging. When Paul talks about his own bowels, he's saying he's my convert. I led him to Christ. I nurtured him. I discipled him. So I urge you to receive him. We see in verse 13, whom I would have retained with me, that in thy stead he might have ministered unto me in the bounds of the gospel. So Paul was saying, I could have benefited from him myself. Paul says he might have ministered unto me. And I'll say this tonight, it would perhaps blow most Christians' minds who would be able to minister to preachers. Even me, I've said many a times, those who you help the most end up helping you the most. Those who I was the closest to at Caesarea were those who let me help them. Those who came to me for help. My time is primarily spent in three ways. That's family time, sermon prep, which kind of involves prayer and devotions, and then helping others. I got to have time for the people. Got to have time for the needs of the people. If somebody's down, I try to be there for them the best I can. Somebody's going through some type of struggle, I try to be there for them the best I can. Sometimes that involves meeting in my office. Sometimes that involves coffee. Sometimes it involves lunch. Sometimes I try to keep supper clear, so I try to meet with people at different times, try to be home in the evening the best I can, if possible. And, you know, but breakfast, lunch, coffee, things. I'm good for coffee anytime up during the day and stuff. I'm good with that. You know, if it's golf, it's golf. If it's riding motorcycles, I can do that too. If it's hunting, I can do that. If it's fishing, I can do that. And just try to get together with people on their terms, on their level. If you want to minister to me, then allow me to minister to you. You don't see fruit in the lives of those who won't allow you to help them. So a preacher could actually be more encouraged by those who have the most problems. Now, that sounds crazy. It sounds crazy. I see some of y'all's looks. That sounds crazy, don't it? But if you understand the concept that when you help others, they help you, then you need people that need help. So a preacher could actually, again, be more encouraged by those who have the most problems, who is allowing the preacher to help them turn to the Lord And then the preacher gets to see that fruit in their lives. Rather than someone who fills the pew, even if every service, and they come across as though they don't need the preaching or they're too good for others, never come to the pastor for advice. In their minds, they don't even need a pastor. Now, when a preacher works a field, a ministry, he desires to see fruit of the harvest. And I'm thankful for that. Everywhere we've been, and I praise the Lord for that, which it was only two places. I don't want y'all to think I've been all over the map. I was assistant pastor and faith-based addictions director at Chippewa. And you know what? When I got to that RU program, there was probably about 10 or 15 people that was going to it. And there was times the RU program on Friday night, the addictions program had a larger attendance than the Sunday morning had at the church. And then we go to Caesarea, and the Lord blessed there. There was always a harvest, but you got to sow seed. You've got to sow seed. You don't sow seed, there ain't going to be no harvest. You don't go out into the community, there will not be a harvest. You're not going to get it. And a lot of churches don't have a harvest because they're not planting. They're not sowing. You've got to go out, and you've got to sow, and you've got to plant. And if you do, there will be a harvest. And the Lord has always provided the harvest. And I thank Him for that. Caesarea, when we got there, it was, and again, the Lord gets all the glory because it was His harvest. We just did what He told us to do. We got there and it was 30 and 40, 40 or so. We had some ups, we had some downs. Our fourth year in, I believe I told y'all, we were hitting about 100 special Sundays, about 130, 140. And I mean, that's the Lord, it's harvest. That's what that is, it's harvest. You invest in people. You go out into the community, you sow seed, you plant seed. You do that, there's going to be a harvest. And I just continually, as we're going out and we're sowing and we're sowing and sowing, and yes, we'd see people saved, and yes, some of them wouldn't come, and yes, some of them wouldn't get baptized, but you'd have those professions of faith at the door, and you know, and we're thinking, man, what's going on? What's happening? Because we're reaching them, so to speak, but they're not coming. They're not coming in, and I'm trying to encourage the people, and I'm preaching on the coming harvest, the coming harvest, the coming harvest, because you can't go out and sow all kinds of seed and there not be a harvest for the Lord. So I'm preaching on the coming harvest. Now, I can't preach on the coming harvest just yet here because we got to go sow some seed. We got to go plant. Now, once we've been sowing and once we've been planting more, then you'll start hearing some more stuff about the coming harvest. And it's all faith that the Lord's going to do what He said He's going to do to begin with. But when a preacher works a field, he works a ministry, he desires to see the fruit of the harvest. Fruit from planting. Look at what else Paul says. We got to move on. Verse 14, but without thy mind would I do nothing, that thy benefit should not be as it were of necessity, but willingly. Paul wanted Philemon and this church to not be forced out of necessity, but he wanted them to willingly say. He wasn't going to just drop Onesimus off in their life. He wanted to write them first. He wanted to lay out his case, the case of Onesimus, and then send Onesimus. And Paul continues his case in this case of Onesimus in verse 15. For perhaps he therefore departed for a season, that thou shouldest receive him forever. I agree wholeheartedly with Paul. It's not good what Onesimus did. It wasn't good what the prodigal son did. But sometimes God can use distance. God can use a departure for a season for the long-term good. And I could use myself as an example. My wasted years wasn't good, but God is using them for my long-term good. People who loved me, missed me, prayed for me while living in that season, though they were without me for a season, it prepared them and it prepared me to be received for what, Lord willing, would be their lifetime and mine. And Paul talks about how they should receive Onesimus now. In verse 16 through 18, not now as a servant, but above a servant, a brother beloved, especially to me, but how much more unto thee, both in the flesh and in the Lord. Verse 17, if thou count me therefore a partner, receive him as myself. Now notice verse 16. Not now as a servant, but above a servant, a brother beloved. Now remember this in verse 16, because we're going to get back to it in verse 18. On the surface, it would appear as if Paul is saying to forget what Onesimus owed Philemon and why he was a slave to begin with. On the surface, that's what it looked like, but it goes beyond that. Paul wouldn't do that. Now in verse 17, notice this. Paul puts Onesimus right there with him at equal position. If you count me a partner, then count him a partner. Then in verse 18, if he hath wronged thee or oweth thee aught, put that on mine account. Paul's heart here is amazing. We see a type of grace here, which brings us back to what Paul is saying in verse 16. Accept him as a brother, not as a servant. And Paul isn't asking them to exhibit mercy on his behalf, but Paul is saying, I will bestow grace on his behalf. I will reach down into my pocket and I will pay what he owes you. So when he comes back, he is no more a slave, but a brother. Steve Currington, the founder of RU, used this illustration once. You get pulled over for a 50 and a 35 and you go to the courthouse. The judge says you're guilty. It's a $150 fine. You have to pay it. What's that? That's judgment. If you were to go in there to the courthouse, the judge said, that's a $150 fine, but I'm going to waive that fine. That's mercy. You didn't get what you deserved. But if you go in there and the judge says, that's a $150 fine, and he pulls out his wallet and he says, I'll pay that for you, that's grace. And that never happens. You know, sometimes we lean more towards judgment if it's in our power. We're just going to drop the hammer on somebody. Or mercy, which means we're not going to drop the hammer on somebody. But very seldom do we take and turn the hammer around and take the blow to our own head. We don't do that. That's grace. And that never happens. But Christ did that for us on the cross of Calvary. The Apostle Paul is pulling out his wallet here in an act of grace for Onesimus. If he owes, I'm going to take care of it. Then Paul continues in verses 19 through 21. I, Paul, have written it with mine own hand. I will repay it. Albeit I do not say to thee how thou owest unto me even thine own self besides. Yea, brother, let me have joy of thee in the Lord. Refresh my bowels in the Lord. Having confidence in thy obedience, I write unto thee, knowing that thou wilt also do more than I say. You know, emphasis on verse 21. Having confidence in thy obedience, I wrote unto thee. And then also, knowing that thou wilt also do more than I say. Paul knew before he even wrote the letter that they were an obedient church. Not obedient to Paul, but a church that was obedient to the Spirit's leading. Paul also knew that not only would they receive Onesimus, but they would go above and beyond in the case of Onesimus. And I ask you tonight, what kind of church are we? Are we a church that, like Paul, can become all things to all people? Or are we all things to some people? Sometimes if we're not careful, we'll be all things to some people. And it's tragic, and I've seen it before in churches, and as the Spirit leads, I'd always address it. There was times, and I will be honest with you, and I called it out. Sometimes, depending on who the family was, be 20 people signing up for a meal. And then also, depending on who it was, you couldn't get 3 people to sign up for a meal. That's sad. Sometimes we try to be all things to some people rather than all things to all people. Gotta be careful for that. And sometimes it's tragic. sometimes the people who had the least turnout in the church, yeah, they were the least liked, and sometimes it was for obvious reasons. Sometimes they just weren't friendly. And the Bible talks about that. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. If you're not friendly, you're not going to have many friends, which means when you find yourself in a situation where you need friends, there are not many going to be there because you're not friendly. Now, I do think it's an opportunity at times for the church to say, you know what? I'm going to be there for them because that's what's right. And because I do it for them, I'm going to do it for them. We got to do that. And again, I ain't seen none of that here. If I do, I mean, we got to be there for each other. We got to love each other. I don't care who they are. I don't care who they are. I don't care how much they do for you or how little they do for you. How much they toot your horn or the opposite of tooting horn, whatever that is. It don't matter. And that's the type of grace and forgiveness and long-suffering and forbearing that, you know, we as a church, we just got to have. Somebody does something to you on Sunday, do everything you can to move on from it and the best you can to forget about it come the next service. And shake their hand and be ready to love on them, be ready to be friendly to them. It's for the sake of the body. Again, we do it. We do it with our own body. We forgive our thumbs, our fingers. We forgive the different parts of our bodies. We don't want to cast them aside. My uncle was just talking because he's got diabetes and he's lost some body parts from his diabetes, a foot and stuff. And he then after the foot, it went on up his leg. And he was talking the other day. How, you know, he's trying to avoid any more trips to the chop shop, is what he called it. He don't want to go to the chop shop anymore. And, you know, we want what we got. We don't want it to go anywhere. And, you know, and I mean, and we got to be that way with each other. You know, everybody in here, from me on back, will be difficult at times. We'll say something that shouldn't have said. Will come across in a way that we didn't intend to, and we need to just look past it. Say, that's my brother. He's a part of the body. That's my sister. She's a part of the body. And love each other through it. And you know what? Just like you, unless something's crazy wrong with it, your thumb's going to quit hurting. You know what? People, they're just not going to hurt you all the time. Sometimes, unless they're just bent on that. I don't think we have anybody here like that that's just bent on hurting people. At that point, then, you know, I don't know. But that's a whole different message. Entirely. But Paul became all things to all people. Paul knew that Philemon could and would handle Onesimus with the right heart, the right spirit, and the right attitude. And he also knew it about the church. And the church follows the pastor. If you have a pastor that loves people, and the people get to see him love people, and the pastor's preaching on how to love people, then the church not only has a word on how to love people, but an example on how to love people. So if I'm right and you follow me, then we'll be able to reach a broad scope of people when it comes to Jacksonville. And Jacksonville is fairly broad. There's a lot of different cultures in Jacksonville. A lot of different cultures. I'm open to all of them coming. It don't matter to me. it doesn't. I'm gonna love them. You know, and we had certain battles. You know, even and sometimes people think that the South has more prejudice. Well, the church I got into up north. When we first got there, it had plenty in and of itself. Had a lady say, well, she was brought up back in the 50s in Mansfield, and it was a big GM town, and it was white, blue collar, is what Mansfield was. And she was like, when I was growing up, they were on the back of the bus, and we were up front. And I said, well, it's not when you were growing up. And and the church is open to everybody. And, you know, and through dealing with it and preaching on things again in love. And I had a guy come up to me, which was crazy. He passed out more tracts and talked to more people about the Lord than anybody else. And we were getting ready to embark out on soul winning. And he came up to me shortly before, and he had a problem with one of the tracts, because one of the tracts had a black person on it. And he had a problem with the tract. He said, "I don't want the tract on that track rack." He's like, "I don't want it." And I said, "Well, let's go talk about this." So let's go talk about it. So we go back to my office and we're talking about this, and I'm breaking it down and I'm going through scripture with him and stuff. And then I asked him, I said, "Brother, you're all about tracts, all about trying to reach people for Christ." I said, "If you knocked on a door and a black person came to the door, what would you do? Would you share the gospel with them, or would you turn away and walk off?" And he looked me straight in the eye. He said, "I'd turn around and I'd walk off." And I said, "Brother, so you're telling me that because of his color, you would have a part in damning his soul to hell for all eternity?" And I tell you what, it wasn't that, you know, through the Lord working, about 4 or 5 months went by, and he came back to me and he was crying. He said, "Pastor, the Lord keeps highlighting that all. How many times all comes up in the Bible? All. And the Lord just highlighted that for him. And I tell you what, it made all the difference. It made all the difference with him. And the Lord changed his heart. And again, I don't know where people are here with it. I'm just letting folks know where I'm at with it. And it was a question I asked before I even came to the church to be a pastor. I asked the trustees. We have a adopted son that's black. Will that be a problem? They said, "No, we don't think that'd be a problem." I said, "All right." Because obviously that's a deal breaker. You don't accept him, you don't accept my family. You don't accept me. It'd have been a deal breaker. That's one thing, if it's one or two, they can get over it or leave. But if it was the whole church and it was a systemic issue, then no, it's a deal breaker. And I'm all for reaching to whosoever will. Whosoever will may come. I'm after all of them. All of them. I don't care where they came from, how much money they make. I don't care what drugs they own. I don't care what their addictions are. I'm trying to reach them for Christ. And there's a place for them here. There has to be. Where else in Jacksonville? Is there a King James Bible being preached? It's conservative. It's got to be us. And Paul was laying out the case here to Philemon and this church about Onesimus. And again, I've dealt with some types of Onesimus. And I'll often remember what the Lord said about the least of these. And he called them his brethren, the least of these. Society has their hierarchy, so to speak. You're up here and then you're down here. Jesus wasn't that way. He was after the whosoever will. And we got to be the same way.